Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, well, that was a show that did not disappoint. After all the planning and preparation for an event, the likes of which Findlay had never seen before and won't see again for another 75 years, Mayor Christina Mern shares her post-eclipse thoughts and reaction. Also this morning, even though many states, including Ohio, have tried to crack down on distracted driving, it remains a growing problem. What does and doesn't work to keep people focused when they're behind the wheel? And now that spring is here, it's time to fire up the grill or the smoker and do some outdoor cooking. What's the difference between the two anyway? We have tips to make you a backyard barbecue legend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. So a couple of postscript notes on yesterday's eclipse. I posted this on social media last night as the sun was setting for real. last evening, I was sitting out on my front porch swing and just kind of enjoying the last few moments of the day, reflecting on what an incredible experience that was, seeing the total solar eclipse. And the thought crossed my mind that there, in my lifetime, there are a handful of days that I wish I could bottle up and be able to relive anytime I wanted over and over again. Yesterday was definitely one of those days. It was just absolutely incredible. I can see now why people chase these things. As a matter of fact, I saw an article yesterday from a solar scientist, space scientist, who said the most common question that they get immediately after someone sees an eclipse for the first time is, when and where is the next one? And I have to admit, that was the very first thing that I looked up online, the very first thing that I Googled after the eclipse was over. When and where is the next one? That is the, and by the way, the answer is here in a couple of years in Iceland. So if you, I guess there's going to be one, what, over the Arctic Ocean. And that one, yeah, it kind of goes through Iceland. In Iceland in August of, I think, 2026. Wouldn't be a bad vacation. So if you are looking, one of the other, apparently the other big thing that people Google after an eclipse, at least they did yesterday, Google Trends searches, the Google Trends folks say searches for why do my eyes hurt spiked after the eclipse. So apparently some people did not get the message that you have to wear your solar eyeglasses. Why do my eyes hurt? Spiked during and after the total solar eclipse. It says that term saw a jump in the number of searches around 2 p.m. And peaked at 3 p.m. Eastern. Other popular searches yesterday ahead of the eclipse were, can I look at the sun, and solar eclipse no glasses. No, you cannot look at the sun. What happened? So hopefully you remembered to wear your glasses and you are not among those people who are searching for why do my eyes hurt. By the way, I thought this was kind of interesting. Of all of the people who posted on social media about their experience with the seeing the eclipse, I thought it was really interesting. William Shatner posted something that I thought was really interesting. Star Trek's Captain Kirk. William Shatner thought about this. And I hadn't considered it, but he's probably right. Said people who experienced a solar eclipse before there was a scientific explanation. I mean, think back in the prehistoric days before science could explain what was going on. And imagine if you had no idea what was going to happen yesterday and suddenly the sun disappears and you have that incredible sight in the sky of the corona. It you would have been dumbstruck, as William Shatner put it. If you think of it in those terms, think of how excited and blessed you would be to see all of that unfold yesterday. William Shatner was at Indiana University with a crowd of people watching the eclipse. So I thought that was kind of interesting and really insightful. Yeah, can you imagine, you know, the prehistoric days when people had no idea what was going on? Man. By the way, those eclipse glasses that everyone used yesterday, you may think, well, what are they good for now? Believe it or not, they still have a purpose. Assuming that you're not going to hold on to them just to look at the sun on, you know, random, you know, randomly, you know, sometime in the future, there's not going to be a whole lot to see with your solar eclipse glasses from this point forward, at least for another 75 years. But you can donate them to charity. Yes, there is a group called Astronomers Without Borders that accepts donated eclipse glasses to send to places like Africa and South America, poor countries, for future eclipse events, places where they may not be able to get solar eclipse glasses. So they take the donated ones from previous eclipses and distribute them there. You can donate your used or unused eclipse glasses, because a lot of folks had extra ones that they didn't use. You can donate them at any Warby Parker store, and they will be forwarded to Astronomers Without Borders. Also, the organization Eclipse Glasses USA is accepting them to send to students in Latin America for the annular eclipse there that is coming up in October. And I guess if you are planning to go to the next one in the United States, which would be in 20 years, in 2044, you can actually save those. I know they say they're printed on their the glasses that you should discard them after 3 years, but they say if you store them, you know, in a cool, dry place, then you can probably use them for the next one. Although they're not that expensive, so I don't know that I would hang on to them for 20 years just for that, just to avoid paying $1.99 for them next time it comes around. But if you want to donate them to charity, that's how you do that. Kind of interesting. So by the way, this was, I think, has to be the award for the dumbest promotion tied to the solar eclipse. We mentioned yesterday that there are, and over the past couple of weeks, there are all kind of businesses that were cashing in on the solar eclipse because that's the American way. And nothing wrong with that. But the dumbest product promotion tied to the solar eclipse was Sun Chips. The snack company Sun Chips was offering a deal that was only good for the 4 minutes or so that the eclipse lasted. You could enter to win a free bag of their limited edition Solar Eclipse Pineapple Habanero and Black Bean Spicy Gouda Sun Chips. But you could only do that during the eclipse. Apparently, Sun Chips partnered with astronaut Kelly Girardi to create the flavor. If there was anyone out there who would rather register to win a bag of Sun Chips rather than actually watching the eclipse, because you could only sign up during the eclipse. I mean, no disrespect to Sun Chips. It's a great snack, but I'm not missing the eclipse to sign up for a free bag, you know? Dumb. Just dumb. I don't know how many people did it, but I'm hoping that that promotion flopped, because that's just, I mean, I get the idea and, you know, I get why someone would pitch that, but to green light that promotion and encourage people to miss the eclipse so they can sign up for a free bag of Sun Chips. Come on, man. Gee, Christmas. And let's see. The NCAA Men's Basketball Championship was played last night. UConn won, by the way. I hope I'm not ruining that for you. I don't mean to play spoiler there, but UConn beat Purdue for the men's championship. I wish that they could play it a little bit earlier. I could not stay up, you know, late to watch after all of the excitement yesterday, and, you know, I get up really early in the morning, so I couldn't stay up and watch the game last night. So I don't even know if it was any good. I know UConn won by like 15 points. I did watch Sunday's game, the women's final between South Carolina and Iowa. And by the way, the women's basketball championship was another record breaker. It was the most watched basketball game, men's or women's, college or pro, since 2019. The final drew 18.7 million viewers throughout the entirety, and I think it peaked at like 23 million viewers or something like that. So the third time in a week that a game featuring Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes broke viewership records. Their Elite Eight game against LSU had 12.3 million viewers. The Final Four game against UConn racked up 14.2 million viewers. And then the championship game, a record breaker all unto its own. So pretty incredible there. I'd be interested to see what the numbers were on the men's final last night and how they compare to the women's final on Sunday. And lastly, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, if you did stay up last night to watch the men's basketball final, perhaps you are a little tired waking up this morning. Even if you did not and you got a good night's sleep last night, if you are waking up feeling tired, there is a term for that. It is called idiopathic hypersomnia. It is a condition that leaves you feeling tired even if you have had a good night's rest. Signs of this include brain fog, being hard to rouse from sleep, headaches, confusion, and misplacing or losing items. If you do that, it says it also means that people with excessive tiredness experience seconds-long microsleeps where they are doing activities without being aware of what they are doing. Have you ever had that happen? Idiopathic hypersomnia is under-recognized and often disabling, says Dr. Paul Reading, a neurologist and an expert in excessive sleepiness. He says it massively interferes with all aspects of life, social, educational, your career life, and all of that. Doesn't say how you prevent it or what you can do about it. Just if you've ever experienced that, I guess at least now you know there's a term for it. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a high around 70, a chance of showers and storms tonight, a low around 50. The folks at Sunrise Senior Living in Findlay got to enjoy the total solar eclipse. WFIN was on hand as several residents donned their solar eclipse glasses and looked toward the sky Monday afternoon. We spoke with 97-year-old Teresa Roberts, who was absolutely blown away by her first total solar eclipse.
Yeah, it didn't last long, but it was worth waiting.
I guess that's what makes eclipses special.
It sure was.
So, really special.
Teresa said she had been looking forward to the eclipse for a long time. Thanks to Sunrise Senior Living for letting WFIN stop by and be a part of their special day. Get more of our conversation with Teresa in a video in the story on our website. Earlier in the day, we stopped by Emery Adams Park to talk to people who had come into town for the solar eclipse. Brian from Michigan sums up in one word why he came to Findlay to watch the eclipse.
Totality.
And Findlay had one of the longest times of totality with around 3 minutes and 40 seconds. I hope you enjoyed the total solar eclipse, because the next total solar eclipse for Ohio isn't until 2099. The Findlay Police Department says gunshots were exchanged between individuals in Findlay over the weekend. It happened in the 100 block of East Folk Avenue at around 4:20 Saturday morning. Upon initial investigation, it was determined by officers that several shots were exchanged between individuals and damage to property was discovered in the area. No injuries were reported, however. It is an ongoing criminal investigation, and anybody with information is asked to contact the Findlay Police Department. The City of Findlay Greenway site has opened for the season. It's located at 330 North Corey Street behind the Public Works Department building. The Green Waste site is for yard waste disposal like leaves, brush, limbs, and grass, and is available to City of Findlay residents only at no charge. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So after all of the planning and preparation for an event, the likes of which Findlay had never seen before and won't see again for another 75 years, Mayor Christina Mern is with us on the line this morning. Share her post-eclipse thoughts and reaction as we put the final touches on this huge event. Where did you end up seeing the eclipse yesterday?
I ended up watching from the airport. I stopped around to all of the different watch sites.
Yeah.
And then made my way out to the airport, and I figured in an emergency that was an easy spot for me to get in and out of.
And I know we were just talking before we went on the air. It was just, your reaction was kind of like mine. I wasn't really sure what to expect going in, but it wildly exceeded anything that I could have imagined that it would be like.
It was, I was excited and I knew it would be cool. And I knew that, it's going to get dark and I'll be able to look at the sun, with the moon in front of it for a couple seconds. But I think what was so neat to me is to see the change in the total atmosphere, right? We could literally see the darkness coming and feel the change in the air. And then to see as soon as the sun started peeking out again, it was like, a radiant star bursting. And it was incredible.
The one thing that really struck me is when the sun or the moon started to move away from the sun and we got that first burst of light after the eclipse, you quickly put your glasses back on and how slim a sliver of the sun was causing such blinding light immediately. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yes.
I can now see why people go and chase these things.
That's exactly what my team was saying.
So with respect to that, it seemed as though that Findlay didn't quite get the huge influx of people into town to visit the eclipse as some of the early predictions that we might double or triple our population. It didn't seem as though that was the case. I know it would be virtually impossible to get a head count, but what was your reaction to the size of the crowds that we did see?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The numbers definitely are lower than what we had been kind of told to prepare for.
Right.
But overall, I was really happy with the volume that we saw because it was really manageable. It flowed well. Our planning all, really worked the way we had expected. And I think one of the benefits to that was that our team that was working yesterday and helping were actually able to enjoy the day as well and be able to experience it. So I'm really happy with how it all turned out and obviously no major issues. But would have always loved to show Findlay off to more people. But I was really happy with how it all went.
My wife and I were talking after the eclipse yesterday, and she said something that I thought was probably the best descriptor. She said, we probably got as many people as we could comfortably handle. I mean, all the hotels were full. We knew that. Airbnbs were booked. We did have some people come in, but we had probably the right amount of people for what we could comfortably handle. Anything more, and it might have been a bigger mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, our communities got capacity, and we knew that a lot of the traffic was going to be day of traffic.
Right.
And so that's where you really don't know what to expect. So mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see what the region overall received. I know we had some of the best viewing in the world with the weather predictions, the cloud coverage and everything. So I think it was a matter of, people had made plans to go to other places, maybe bigger cities that they thought were easier to get to. But ultimately, I think they missed out by not coming to Finley.
Yeah, there are a number of reasons why maybe we didn't get the crowds that were predicted. The path of totality was wider than it was in 2017, and there were more cities along the path of totality that people could gravitate to, where hotels might have been more plentiful and so on. So that probably contributed to it. But you talk about the fact that everything did go smoothly. Obviously, give a shout out to all of the folks who helped make that happen.
Yeah, so definitely leading the charge were Rob Martin, Service Safety Director for the City of Finley, and Jacqueline Holman, Special Projects Manager. They really led the charge and worked closely then with the Chamber of Commerce and Visit Finley and Economic Development. But then obviously all the department heads for the City of Finley. Our public works team does an incredible job of making sure that cones and barriers and traffic signals are all, working in tandem to be able to direct traffic and get everything set up and cleaned up, police, fire. But it really was all hands on deck. We had folks from our engineering department and water and sewer distribution that obviously were doing their kind of normal efforts of making sure our plants are operating properly, but also being out and helping set up, tear down, and make sure that the city continues to run. But really, the City of Finley team is wonderful. I can't say it enough. We're very fortunate to have so many people that take great pride in their work and, passionate about the City of Finley. And yesterday, they all got to put that on display and did a wonderful job.
And not just for the day yesterday. Anyone who was out over the weekend knows that there was a lot of work that was going into preparing for whatever was to happen yesterday over the weekend. I mean, this was not just a one-day event for many of those workers. They were busy the entire weekend.
Oh, for sure. Even late last week with the rain that we were getting, they were putting mulch down and doing refreshing the flags downtown and doing all those things, but it got condensed because of the rain. And then we had brought in porta potties. So making porta potties were set up. Well, if we get a bunch of high winds, we don't want them flying over. So we had to move them a couple of extra times, all those things that folks didn't see. But we definitely were staffed up more this weekend to make sure even little things that you would never think of at some of our watch sites. Emory Adams is a great example. The security lights turn on automatically, and there's no way without just shutting off the power to that entire area to turn them off. And obviously, we didn't want them coming on during the totality. Mm-hmm. And so our team literally went through and unscrewed the light bulbs.
Wow.
So that they wouldn't turn on and ruin the experience for people.
Wow.
And those are things that the team thought of, right? The public works guys were like, wait a second, this could be a problem, and took care of it. They're really screwing in the light bulbs, and I can assure you it does not take more than one individual to screw in light bulbs.
but one very busy person to take care of all of those. To that end, I guess, pretty grateful for all of the preparation. Again, we go back and say, well, maybe the crowds weren't as big as we had hoped for, and maybe we over-prepared, but certainly better to over-prepare than under-prepare, and certainly all of those preparations paid off. Because we didn't have any major issues with the crowds that we did have.
Correct. And, one thing I forgot to mention is the airport team. They do such a wonderful job of bringing in, and they are a global connection for our community. And they, had 100 planes. And I think we're going to work on figuring out where everybody came from.
Wow.
But as I was talking to some of the pilots, they had trivia going on. They were having a bunch of fun. And so they did a really nice job. And I know I heard from multiple of the pilots, we're definitely coming back. This has been a great experience and we want to see more of the city. And that's exactly what our goal was for the day, was to show off our community, but hopefully get those folks to come back and enjoy it.
And in the end, how awesome was it that just about everybody, not everybody, but nearly everybody ended up with a day off? I mean, again, not knowing what to expect, schools closed and a lot of businesses, the ones that could gave people at least part of the day off. And so a lot of us could enjoy the day, the full experience of the day, not just, those 45 minutes or so right around the eclipse, but could could really enjoy the entirety of the day. So it was really nice in that respect.
It was. And you know what? My husband and I always joke that it seems like we get days off when the weather's crummy. So I'm really glad that the weather was beautiful.
Absolutely.
And people were able, we were all able to celebrate and enjoy the beautiful weather. I know lots of people that had, you know, parties at their homes. And it was just a great day to, I think, kick off the spring and know that summer is right around the corner.
Bottom line, after going through this and all of the preparation for, as we mentioned, not just weeks or months, but literally years preparing for this, do you feel like you're kind of ready for anything at this point?
Yeah, I would say so. I think we've got plans for just about everything. And I haven't talked to the team yet, but we might make a little solar eclipse guide for other communities to use. You know, we have some great plans and great recommendations and things to think about, and certainly hopefully can help other communities as they prepare to celebrate in the future.
And put it together and stick it on a shelf for the city leadership 75 years ago or 75 years from now to pull off and
I was
work from.
We'd share it on the internet with other communities. But yes,
that too.
We'll have it for them as well.
Mayor Christina Murren with us this morning, kind of a postscript on the eclipse, thoughts and reaction from yesterday's big event. Mayor Murren, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You know, we talk about post-eclipse, and one of the big concerns was all of the traffic and would we be able to manage the exodus of traffic. And for the most part, we did not have those issues here, but that's not to say that those issues didn't exist. Even as late as 8:30 last night, so like 6 hours after the eclipse, the ODOT website reported like 15-mile backup at the Ohio-Michigan line on I-75. 15-mile backup. I was looking at it on OGO and also on Waze. And traffic was just a nightmare getting back into Michigan with all of those people leaving Ohio to go back home. And now, not all of those people came from Findlay, of course. They were coming from Toledo and BG and Findlay and Lima and Wapak and all of that. But, you know, there was an awful lot of traffic, and 23 wasn't any better than I-75 heading back up toward Ann Arbor either. But that was, you know, one of the big concerns that fortunately we didn't have to deal with yesterday, and all of the things that go along with, you know, bumper to bumper traffic in recent years. A lot of states, this is kind of leading us into our cover story this morning. In recent years, many states, including Ohio, have taken steps to strengthen their distracted driving laws. Remember yesterday, everybody was saying, hey, pack your patience, don't drive distracted, don't drive with your eclipse glasses on and all of that. A lot of states, including Ohio, have taken steps to strengthen their distracted driving laws in recent years. And yet, Cambridge Mobile Telematics has found that the incidence of distraction behind the wheel has actually increased 23% since 2020. 23% increase in just the past 3 years. We are joined this morning by CMT Senior Vice President Ryan McMahon and Robert Passmore of the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. Ryan, let me start with you. Why are these distracted driving numbers still increasing?
Well, you know, it's you made a good point there about the change in the law in Ohio about a year ago. Ohio has actually been a success story. Over the last 4 years, the amount of distracted driving has increased nationwide, but Ohio has actually stemmed that tide through the implementation of the hands-free driving law, and that has been a success. Aside from that, it's important for drivers to know and understand that behind the wheel, if you use your phone while driving, you're increasing your crash risk significantly. About 34% of crashes are caused and present from distracted driving, where a driver's phone is in their hand a minute prior to the crash. And when that crash happens, it's at about 40% higher speeds without emergency stopping or avoidance from the crash. So really significant issue. But I think that the takeaway for Ohio drivers is that the hands-free law that was enacted and put in place a year ago is helping to make Ohio roads safer.
It's interesting, and that's certainly good news for the state of Ohio. Let me dig a little deeper into that, because the distracted driving law that's on the books now is new. We had laws on the books before. They have been strengthened, so it leads me to wonder what is the difference, and when you look at the laws elsewhere in the country, what are the most effective laws and why?
Yeah, the biggest difference is hands-free versus trying to say that you can or can't do specific activities on a phone. Like, some states have no texting laws, meaning that you can't text and drive. But that law makes sense in the late 90s and maybe the first few years of the 2000s. But I don't even know what percentage of time is spent texting versus using messaging apps versus Instagram and mm-hmm. shopping versus, you know, emailing work, right? So what happened is the amount and the usage of mobile phones has skyrocketed. It's increased behind the wheel at the same time, and it's caused an increase in crashes and the impact from those crashes at the same time, which includes the cost of those crashes in dollars and unfortunately in lives too.
Yeah. Again, using Ohio's law as an example, because it's the one that applies to us, there is an exception to the law that applies to vehicles that are stopped, including the time that we are stopped at a red light. Are there concerns with that exception?
Yeah, I would tell you that in general, my advice would be, as a driver, understand that there is something called the distraction hangover. There's a period of time between the point that you put your phone away and then start driving that we actually see an increase in crashes at that period of time. So while that does persist in the law, just because it's legal or okay, it doesn't mean it's safe. And then it's not safe, because we have a very hard time of context switching as drivers, and it causes increases in crashes.
Bob, I want to bring you into the conversation here as well. Of course, we were just talking recently about the rising cost of car insurance that many people are seeing. This is a big part of that, right? How does distracted driving contribute to higher costs?
Yeah, distracted driving is just one example of really an overall deterioration of driving habits since the pandemic. It's probably something that we've all observed for ourselves, walking around or driving around, you see some of the things that other people do, but mm-hmm. we're seeing some studies and data that back that up, things like, you know, the information that Ryan's been talking about. But we've also seen studies that show there's more speeding, more red light running, more aggressive driving. And that all plays into, there are two key drivers into what we all pay for auto insurance. That's the number of claims and the cost of the things that are paid for as a result of those claims. So when the cost of what auto insurance pays for goes up, then auto insurance premiums are going to go up for everyone. And that's even if you hadn't had a claim or a ticket. In fact, if you have had an accident or a traffic ticket, most likely you're going to see a more significant increase.
Yeah.
And a lot of this is tied to inflation. The overall rate of inflation is slowed, but the cost of things that auto insurance pays for continues to go up, and in some cases very significantly. For mm-hmm. example, the cost of overall auto repair is up by about 21% in recent years. The cost of parts, nearly 40%. Labor rates between 6 and 10%. A lot of that driven by the increasingly sophisticated technology in the vehicles that takes longer to repair or is more cost. The part simply costs more. Repairs are taking longer too, and that means higher rental car expenses. Mm-hmm. Medical costs also continue to rise too. The result is, you know, auto insurance claim losses and expenses have spiked to about $1.12 for every dollar that insurers have taken in premium. And what we're seeing now is auto insurers are just catching up to those price increases.
Yeah.
Sort of like a wave hitting the shore.
Mm-hmm. I want to throw this out to both of you, because, again, we talk about cell phone use when we say distracted driving. That's the thing that immediately comes to mind. But it's important to note that there are many different types of distractions that can take a driver's attention away from the task at hand. I do wonder if sometimes we pay so much attention to cell phone use that we overlook or we ignore some of the other distractions that can be just as dangerous and potentially just as deadly.
You're absolutely right about that. It is that anything you do that takes your attention away from driving the vehicle and paying attention to what's happening around you is can potentially be very dangerous. And you know, we've all seen examples of people shaving, reading books, putting on makeup, all those kinds of things. All those kind of things can take your attention away from the road. It really, there's no substitute for an attentive and an engaged driver. Is, you know, that's the best safety tool that there is. And, you know, I think we all do well to remember that whenever we're behind the wheel.
And along the lines of what we were mentioning. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I was just going to say that ultimately, just understand that, you know, while road safety is really something that affects a lot of different components, what you pay for insurance is one of them. A lot of this is in your control, right? So even if somebody else is distracted, if you are not, you could be a defensive driver and you can be in the position to ensure that you get home safely and everyone else does at the same time.
And along the lines that we were mentioning earlier, real quickly, we talk about distracted driving laws. While they say distracted driving, usually they focus on this one specific distraction of cell phone use. Should we be doing more from a regulatory and law enforcement standpoint at addressing some of these other causes of distracted driving as well?
I think that there's a general understanding that from a safety perspective, there's a difference between what is legal and what is not. I think ultimately the best tool that people are maybe not aware of is these programs that provide incentives to drivers for driving safely. And ultimately, the safer that an individual drives, the safer that all the roads are. So while laws are important, and we certainly, you know, back and support all that effort, ultimately incentives are probably the biggest next unlock towards major road safety areas. And the insurance industry is really doing a lot to provide those incentives. About $4 billion a year are provided every year for individuals that that choose to opt into these type of programs.
It is a good point. You want to change people's behavior, you can incentivize them to do it, and it's been proven time and time again. Ryan McMahon, again, from Cambridge Mobile Telematics, and Bob Passmore, the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. Real quickly, where can folks get more information?
Well, on auto insurance cost drivers, they can go to apci.org/cost drivers.
And for understanding of what behaviors cause crashes, can check out cmt.ai.
Gentlemen, thank you both for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So, you know that we had to have at least one story related to the eclipse in the broken news. So let me give you this. It is out of Florida, where a Georgia woman is facing charges in a road rage incident in the Sunshine State. The Florida Highway Patrol says 22-year-old Taylan Celeste fired randomly at other drivers on Interstate 10, grazing one driver and injuring another when she was hit by shrapnel from, like, flying glass. Fortunately, no life-threatening injuries here. Everybody's going to recover. Apparently, Ms. Celestin checked out of a hotel, telling staff that she was going on a shooting spree directed by God in relation to the eclipse. Directed by God in relation to the eclipse. But it's in Florida. They didn't even have it was partial eclipse in Florida, but they didn't even have totality. I'm not sure this is going to fly. I'm not sure this is going to fly. Troopers found a 9mm handgun and an AR-15 when they arrested her and searched her car. Wow. Thank goodness we didn't have anything like that yesterday. That's... Elsewhere in the broken news, talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, on Friday, There was an earthquake in New Jersey that was felt in New York and Washington and parts of Pennsylvania. This earthquake that happened on Friday. And you talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. A Pennsylvania man was in the midst of getting a vasectomy when the earthquake hit. According to news reports, 33-year-old Justin Allen posted on social media, quote, in all caps, "An earthquake happened in the middle of my vasectomy." He said his appointment at 10 a.m. started out completely normal. But then about 10 minutes into the surgery, the whole room started shaking. He thought it was maybe a train going by near the doctor's office. But then the surgeon said, "Was that an earthquake?" Mr. Allen said initially he thought it was a joke, but fortunately, we're not at a critical moment of the surgery when everything started shaking, so he's going to be fine. He said, in the end, it was an experience that he just had to share with his friends to laugh at. I got a good chuckle. That could have ended much. That could have ended much differently. Whoo, man! Talk about dodging a bullet right there. Speaking of bullets, a Michigan man facing charges after he allegedly shot a Chipotle employee. 32-year-old Aaron Brown accused of shooting the employee in the knee on Friday. And the reason? He was upset over the portion size of guacamole he received. Well, that seems like a reasonable response. I mean, I think we've all had that happen. We go to a fast food restaurant. We are unhappy with the portion size. So what is a reasonable person to do? He pulled out a gun and shot the employee in the knee. Victim is said to be recovering from his injuries. He'll be fine. Mr. Brown is facing several charges. He's probably not welcome back at that particular Chipotle location again, I would imagine. So, I mean, you could leave a bad review online, complain to the manager, or just take out a gun and shoot the employee in the knee. Wow. Speaking of going to extreme measures, a Kentucky man took things to an extreme in order to avoid paying child support. Jesse Kipf, age 39, faked his own death in order to get out of a bill for more than $100,000 in outstanding child support payments. Faked his own death. It didn't work. He actually was discovered he was not indeed dead, and he was hauled before a judge. In a plea agreement, he admitted to faking his death back in January of last year used credentials stolen from a doctor in another state to do so. He apparently accessed Hawaii's death registry system and even created a fake death certificate for himself. His damages include more than $116,000 in losses to his wife, in addition to $79,000 in losses to governmental and corporate networks. He has agreed to pay restitution and pleaded guilty to one count of aggravated identity theft and one count of computer fraud, and he now faces up to 7 years in jail and a fine of up to $500,000 on that charge. He'll be sentenced later this week, all because he wanted to get out of $100,000 in child support. Next time, just pay up. I think that's probably the better alternative. Speaking of identity theft stories, William Woods lives in Los Angeles, discovered that he had been a victim of identity theft after someone had been racking up debt in his name. However, when he reported the fraud to his bank, it was discovered that he himself had committed identity fraud some years ago. Well, turnabout is fair play, I guess. They arrested him and sentenced him to 2 years behind bars for his identity theft. now, the person who stole his identity didn't get off scot-free. This week, a former high-level hospital IT worker in Iowa was discovered to have taken his identity for decades, and he has now pleaded guilty on two federal charges himself. So everybody's going to jail in that story. And finally, in the broken news this morning, be careful. This is home improvement season, right? The spring and summer months, people like to fix up their homes. Be careful who you hire to help with your home improvement and renovation projects. A Texas couple is dealing with a squatter who was initially hired as a contractor to complete some tile work at their property in San Antonio. Judith Matthews and Abram Mendez ended up firing the contractor for not completing the work that he was hired to do, but the man refused to leave the house and is now reportedly living there. Now, this was a home that was a fixer-upper. It wasn't the home that they were living in at the time. They were fixing it up with the hopes of moving in sometime in the future, but they can't now because the fired contractor is living there himself, refused to leave. The couple contacted police to remove him from the property, but authorities say they cannot get involved because of squatters' rights in the state of Texas. They got to now take him to court and evict him. That's crazy. Moral of the story, be careful who you hire to fix up your home. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN, your year-round home for exciting sports play-by-play coverage. Finley Trojan and Ohio State football and basketball. The Cleveland Guardians, Blue Jackets hockey, and the NFL regular season, postseason, and Super Bowl.
Ball game! And Cleveland, for the sixth time ever, you will have a World Series.
The best in live sports coverage happens here. 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. In a new survey of 2,000 adults, they asked, what do you miss? What aspect of your childhood do you most miss? This is the thing about being a kid that you most miss. 35% of adults said when it comes to missing aspects of their childhood, 35% remember starting every day feeling happy. You know, and I'm thinking that's just a state of mind. You don't have to be a kid to start every day feeling happy. I mean, I know there are always days, even as kids, there are days when you don't. But starting every day feeling happy. Number 22, the second one on the list, 22% started the day feeling playful as kids. And again, this is a state of mind. We don't have to be kids. We can do this. This is a choice, people. And 21% said that the aspect of childhood that they most miss was the optimism of youth. And again, that's a state of mind. All three of those top three that we miss the most aspects about being a child are more a state of mind than an age. By the way, they also asked, what childlike activities do you still engage in as an adult? 41% say that they have taken a daytime nap. I do that every day. I don't know. I mean, that's just my sleep schedule with this job. But I guess we could call that a childlike activity, I suppose. 38% say they still play on arcade machines. And I have to admit, it's hard to pass by a skee ball or one of those claw machines. Yeah, that's hard. I'm a sucker for that. And 33% say they color. You know, coloring books and all of that. I know adult coloring is become very popular in recent years. One-third of Americans do that. Recapture their childhood a bit, I guess. Well, spring is here. It is time to fire up the grill or fire up the smoker and do some outdoor cooking. What is the difference between those two anyway? Joining us this morning is Pitmaster Jonathan Barbecue Jones with some tips and recipes that'll turn you into a backyard barbecue legend. Jonathan, first of all, let's talk about that basic question, because that's why we have you here. What is the difference between grilling and smoking?
The main differences between grilling and smoking is usually temperature and flavor. So in barbecue, we like to say low and slow is the way to go. And so when you're smoking, that's when you're usually around the 225 to 275 degree mark. That's where you get that smoky, traditional barbecue flavor from. And then when it comes to grilling, that's anywhere upwards of 400 degrees. That's when you're getting those grill marks, get a good sear on it to really get that char flavor imparted on your meat there.
Okay, so do we have to have two different devices to do this? Do we need a smoker and a grill? You can't do one on the other, right?
That's right. So traditionally, you used to have to have a smoker and a grill off to the side. What I like to use is the Tahoma 900. It's amazing because it can smoke as low as 225 degrees, but you can take it up. You can kick up the heat all the way to 600 degrees get your sizzle on. Yeah, it's definitely got a ton of features where you can get the best of both worlds when it comes to smoking and grilling. And it's amazing, man. It really does take the intimidation out of barbecue, even for beginners. You don't have to be a pit master to get these award-winning type of flavors anymore. On this Tahoma 900, you're going to have things like an easy-to-load hopper, the quick, clean ashtray, and most importantly, what everybody is so hyped about is the Oklahoma Joe's app. Pretty much, we're able to control our grill and smoker and monitor temp from the touch of a button on our phone. It's loaded up with a ton of resources and recipe and walkthrough videos, really just making it easier for beginners and even pit masters like myself to crank out some good barbecue.
How cool is that? And with the added bonus of you got some tech, high tech built in there, and what guy doesn't love to play with technology? So you've got it. You checked off all of the boxes there.
Definitely. And with this particular product, I mean, what Oklahoma Joe's has done throughout the years, they've combined traditional backyard barbecue with innovative technology. And like you're seeing with the grill that I'm talking about today, man, you just get the best of both worlds and the most bang for your buck.
So what are some recipes that are, you know, would be perfect for barbecues this season? Share some ideas with us here.
Yeah, this season, let's go ahead and let's kick it off right. Let's do some ribs. Pair your ribs with your favorite barbecue sauce. And it doesn't stop there. You can really start to experiment with different flavor profiles, too. You can do dry rub ribs. You can do a wet style rib. And then more importantly, you can also get on the grilling side with things like steak kebabs, where you literally load up skewers with your favorite cut of steak, some of your favorite vegetables to add a lot of extra color and flair. And then we also got wings, which is always a crowd pleaser. You can switch up the flavor profiles on these. Sometimes I like to do a buffalo wing. Sometimes I like to do a barbecue sauce wing. Even the dry rubs, like there's a Nashville hot rub that Oklahoma Joe's makes. That's amazing too. And one of my sleeper recipes that I love sharing with folks is lemon pepper garlic dry rub wings. You can just have fun and just barbecue is all about family, friends, and community and getting folks together. And one of the main things that I love is just trying out new things and seeing how people respond to them at the cookout. And it's always a good time when we got smoke rolling, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're sure to draw a crowd if you don't have one already. Now, one of the things about smoking is that I think there's a perception that it is harder, or it is more complicated than just grilling. What are the top tips that you can share for beginners to be able to smoke their food with confidence?
Well, it starts with the right grill or smoker. You want to find something that's convenient and easy to control temperatures on. Makes it easy to monitor your food and your temperatures. Also, you want to find the right grill or smoker that can hold a good amount of charcoal for those longer cooks. And most importantly, too, you want to find something that's quick and easy to clean out The Tahoma 900 checks all of those boxes and does more for users.
And what about grilling? What is the number one, and I guess this could apply to smoking or grilling, what are the top things that people do wrong, the things to avoid doing?
Some of the pitfalls that you want to avoid, especially when you're using charcoal, is cooking too soon before the charcoal briquettes are grayed over.
Okay.
Usually you don't want to start cooking or grilling over charcoal that is still, you know, still black or still catching. You want to wait till they're grayed over and they're ready and the grill and the grates are up to temperature, ready to rock. So those are some of my central tips. And then furthermore too, like you want to be able to control your temperatures easily. So, if you have a grill or smoker where it has a temperature gauge, mm-hmm. you just want to know, hey, if I'm smoking, I'm looking for, you know, 225 degrees to 275 degrees. And if I'm grilling and I want to make sure that grill is nice and hot and where it needs to be, I want to be well above 400 degrees to get that nice sear and that sizzle on.
All right. Jonathan Barbecue Jones on the art of grilling and smoking. As we head into the warmer weather season, the outdoor cooking season, where do we get more information, Jonathan?
For more information, head over to OklahomaJoes.com. And if you're on the hunt for a grill or smoker today, head over to Lowe's.com. They got that Tahoma 900 as well.
All right, very good. We'll link it up on our webpage. Jonathan, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and happy grilling, y'all.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, clean energy. It's one of the biggest buzzwords these days, whether we're talking about the economy, the environment, politics, or all of the above. But how much of an impact is it really having, and how much potential does it really hold? So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, going out, make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.